Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Roma Press Podcast. We hope you are doing well. We hope you have had a relaxing break as Roma Day are getting ready to return to action after the international break. Before getting into all of that, as always, thank you to all of our wonderful patrons over at Patreon. If you would like to join the group chat, get early access to episodes, post-match reaction podcast, you can go to patreon.com/RomaPress, at @ISRomaPress on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, all of the social media platforms. As always, your support means everything. Where do we start? Have you done anything fun during this break?
Yes, any stay good away movies? From Roma.
Yeah, well, I mean, as everyone can see, you are showing off the heavy artillery, the guns. You are feeling more relaxed now than you ever have. You are living your best life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird because Roma haven't, you know, we used to say it when Roma were shit. And we went into this international break with a completely different mood. So it's not like we're running away from a team that has provided us with just misery and sorrow over the last few months.
No, that is, of course, true. The one thing I will say is it is nice, as much as we all love Roma, to kind of just get away for a little bit. That's the only thing I can implore to people. Every time we have these international breaks, even when the Roma are doing bad, just to get back. It is very healthy. You know, there is this saying now, I don't know if millennials or Generation Z coined the term terminally online. That doesn't simply only refer to, in my opinion, the people on 4chan on the dregs of the internet. It also refers to us sitting in our rooms, or in this case, wardrobes, whether it be here or in a kitchen pantry in Asiago. These are our own self-imposed Guantanamos, so to speak. But getting away sometimes is helpful. It is very helpful. And I mean, to add to that too, in terms of storylines for Roma, as far as international breaks go, we are used to the worst of the worst of the worst.
This was not so bad, actually.
No. I mean, I think the most controversial thing that came about was the interview of Zaniolo. We had a few of the patrons asking, would you take Zaniolo back? And
just to give you an idea of the sick people that populate.
Yeah, well, yes, that's a different sickness. No way we are going to even get into something like that. We are not so short on topics that we have to entertain a discussion like that. So maybe we could save that one for the summer. But there is the Euro this summer, so we will be able to make fun of the Azzurri when they undoubtedly fall short at some point.
So, I think you said it last time and they won the Euro. Remember?
Obviously another reverse jinx, by the way.
Absolutely.
So as far as international breaks go, this one has been about as calm, as uneventful as you could have ever asked for. Now, we will get into it shortly. There is some things with the director of sport. Search going on still. Amazing to me. We will be slowly approaching 2 full months of the vacancy remaining. So I thought for sure, especially when Roma made the announcement of Thiago Pinto remaining for 30 days, yes, that had the exact air of the Fonseca thing, yeah? Where they make the announcement and then boom.
Exactly.
So I am very surprised. I am very, very surprised. I put something out on Patreon some weeks ago before there was a large spread. I think it was La Repubblica put it out about Roma's CEO and her the way she has condensed power. And I had made the
Patreon-only episode. There's been
What I did was I photoshopped Miss Luku's face onto that of Tony onto the godfather on Michael Corleone, because she is settling all family business. If you look at the people she has knocked off, and I say that obviously metaphorically, beyond Thiago Pinto too and Jose Mourinho, even if we want to look at the communications department of Roma, I suppose, I don't think I made it a secret here as to who.
No, I mean, contact. You never was mentioned the name. No, you never made the name, but your main contact.
Oh, okay. Well, now we can say it now.
The main contact was dropped like Joe Pesci in Goodfellas, you know, and brought in.
Out of nowhere, by the way, usually Luca Pietrafesa is who I am and we are referring to.
Head of communications.
I mean, very timely with updates. I mean, how many times he would contact about something you and I wrote, I mean, quite literally within moments of it having been published. I mean, you want to talk about diligent. The guy was diligent. As far as why that happened, I do not know. He was at the club for almost a decade. I think he arrived in 2016, if I remember correctly. Very unforeseen. I'm sure something of it will come out. Again, I mentioned it in passing in the previous episode. There is also this very Italian media, by the way they name certain controversial episodes, they always call it something gate, which is very, very annoying to me because it makes something sound as if it is so massive, it is worthy of its own.
Like they're just taking something from an episode of The West Wing or Newsroom.
They really blow it up, at least the primary, I say the old world sort of outlets, the usual suspects that will print absolute falsehoods about myself, some of the things me and Filippo Biafora reported during the Friedkin thing, just be eviscerating us at the drop of a hat, ran by boomers. But we can save that discussion for another time. But again, I mean, as far as talking points go, this one was one of the most tame that I can remember in recent times. I mean, the only one giving interviews was Jose Mourinho. Is that even worth discussing? The only thing I didn't like, Andy, and this is not an attempt.
No, because first of all, before the Jose Mourinho interviews were. Took place right after Thiago Pinto also gave a pretty lengthy interview to Gianluca Di Marzio as a sort of parting interview with the Italian media world of football. And Pinto wanted to meet with Di Marzio specifically because he's his go-to guy. They were good friends. So Pinto went and gave a really lengthy interview in which when he spoke about Mourinho, he actually spoke quite, you know, in admiration. And he said something to the effect of any time, like when a manager is sacked, a part of me dies. So for me, right, it was the worst day as a sporting director at Roma, being with seeing Mourinho walk away was just brutal. And for some reason, just Mourinho the next day or 2 days later eviscerates
him.
He's like, I don't want to ever work with him. I'm not interested in what he has to say. I'm the possibility of working together in the future is zero.
Well, what confuses me too is they obviously, because of age, Thiago Pinto, 38 now, I believe, 37. He's only a couple of only a few years older than myself. That has to be a very odd dynamic, because technically, Thiago Pinto is higher up on the power. Why can't I think of a word? Like the totem pole of power. Yeah, the power structure. I'm having a meltdown here. So there is that in the weird dynamic where, I mean, Jose Mourinho is old enough to be the father of Thiago Pinto. And so that has to be.
He started the career when Thiago Pinto was probably in high school. So
yeah. Right. It's a very odd dynamic. For the life of me, I could not understand what the motivation of Jose Mourinho was by saying that. Because as you said, there was nothing in that interview that put blame on Jose Mourinho, that called out Jose Mourinho that criticized Jose Mourinho.
Could it have been the fact when he spoke, because Thiago Pinto spoke about what the recruitment process at Roma entailed, as in, did Jose Mourinho always get the players he wanted? And Thiago Pinto said, no, he didn't get the players he wanted, but it was always a process that involved Jose Mourinho. And I think in recent days, Mourinho has been pushing this narrative, especially in a recent interview with Fabrizio Romano, where he says, at numerous clubs, I was more than just a manager. And I assume that he alludes to us and probably to a team like Manchester United.
Yes.
In our case, I mean, here's a man who, throughout all of his tenure, highlighted the fact that he's been, Mourinho did. He would constantly repeat that he's accustomed now to working with the financial fair play, that he understands Roma a certain reality. And then Thiago Pinto goes and corroborates this theory that, yes, indeed, like this was, it was always a game and a pretty hard game to win in terms of transfer plans that needed to be dictated by the rules of financial fair play. And that Jose Mourinho, like it or not, was part of these discussions. Like, because there is always, with Mourinho, anywhere he goes, there is always the narrative that he's unhappy, that he's not getting what he wants, and that he's oblivious to the decisions that are being made behind his back. And I think Pinto just wanted to send the message that everybody was on board. And perhaps this struck a nerve with Mourinho. The fact that he expected to be given more credit for his work. I don't know, but I really found the stuff that he said and the way he said it so almost venomous, you know, like really, like,
yes,
really angry for I don't know what reason, because Thiago Pinto did nothing but actually praise the man and be very diplomatic and eloquent about clearly a relationship that was difficult. It wasn't an ideal relationship. It was difficult. There were clearly differences in the way they viewed what the team needed. But nonetheless, they worked together for almost 3 years.
My biggest... Well, first off, before even getting into what my biggest issue is, this thing with financial fair play, by the way, if you are a Roma supporter for more than 2 seconds and you are surprised by anything, like if what Jose Mourinho and Thiago Pinto regarding financial fair play, regarding transfers, if that shocked you, you need to wake up out of the coma. If you are not used to this by now, you don't even have to have been watching Roma for very long. It could be less than one season. You are used to this. It feels like we have been doing this thing with financial fair play. Forget financial fair play. Roma were doing this thing, this player trading way of doing transfers. The second James Palotta came into, or what was the name of that other guy that was here for one season? Wasn't it Di Benedetto? Yeah?
Yeah. Di Benedetto.
The second that guy.
Right at the beginning.
Right, for one year. We have been doing this a while. So nothing that was said by them should be even remotely surprising. The thing that bothers, so that aside, the thing that bothered me most, okay, I hate this thing when executives or people in general, it doesn't even have to be football related, once it's over or once there is a split, when they decide to have a go at one another. Listen, if that's what you think, then have the balls to say it when you are there. Say, not he and I are not getting along. We don't see eye to eye. Yes, it may come across as professional, but at least I hate the thing we call it, there's a phrase in Italian that just growing up, I'd heard it nonstop about that. You can't bullshit people. It's about having the straw tail. Yeah, the straw tail. You can't have the straw tail. I can't stand that. Jose Mourinho coming out. If this is how you felt, then just say it at the time. Say you're not. I didn't see eye to eye with him.
Absolutely.
He has a press conference every single week, multiple times per week. You have all the opportunity in the world to say, you know what, Thiago Pinto, we have a good working relationship, but you know what, there are oftentimes he and I, we do not see eye to eye. Hopefully that can improve. so on and so forth. Don't come out after you both are gone and completely flame the guy for what you have just said, and which I agree with, is seemingly no reason, because there was nothing that he said that was disrespectful. Absolutely.
Like, I understand, you know, if Thiago Pinto had gone on and given an interview and actually, I don't know, like made it sound like he was the guy, you know, he was the guy calling the shots, then I understand Mourinho, because of his status,
yes,
his career would be, okay, well, that's not, I don't like it. What do you mean you were the number one guy? You know, obviously, Mourinho is an alpha dog. So, but Thiago Pinto just highlighted the fact that it was complicated overall just to work at Roma due to the conditions imposed by UEFA in the settlement agreement. So he was not putting blame on anybody but himself most of the time. So it was actually a very interesting interview where he highlighted the fact that the majority of this experience was about finding the right talent for cheap, and if you make a mistake, you have to try and get that money back for the club. So he mentioned, for example, Matias Vinha,
who, yes,
we bought from Palmeiras. I believe it was around, what, 10, 11 million at the time.
Yes.
Matias Vinha does not do well at Roma. He goes on loan at Bournemouth. He goes on loan at Sassuolo. He's eventually sold back. I think who got him? Flamengo?
Remember. Yes.
Flamengo. Anyway, for a total cost of up to, I think, 10 million. So more or, yes, less get your money back. So that was, I mean, that was all that Thiago Pinto was saying. He was basically discussing the bolts and the dynamics, the mechanisms of what it means to work for a club like Roma, who must stay competitive, who must aim for bigger objectives, and yet are constantly held back by some bullshit rules that they must live with.
My first thought after I saw the interview of Jose Mourinho in response to Pinto was, I don't think it was about what he said. My first thought, it was about what he didn't say, why he didn't come out and place more blame on Friedkin, place more blame on UEFA, whatever it may be, the referees. I don't know. That's what my first thought was, because I looked up and down that interview of Pinto, and there was nothing that anybody can conceivably take as a slight, a criticism, placing blame, nothing. So I think, and my assumption is, Jose Mourinho just did not like how Thiago Pinto perhaps did not throw more criticism at the Friedkins. That is the only conclusion I can draw. But as you pointed out very correctly, I was shocked at how just brutal he came out against Pinto. Brutal. I mean, it's one thing to say, you know, we tried it, we had a good working relationship, but it might be difficult for us to work together in the future. To go out of your way on top of that to say, yeah, well, you know, they say never, sometimes you never know when your opinion may change. In this case, it's no, never, zero, nada, never going to happen. That seems a bit of overkill, in my opinion, for, again, a relatively tame interview given by Thiago Pinto, who, in terms of personality, with all due respect to him, he is about as interesting as wall paint. He's not going to give anything bombastic. He doesn't jump off of the screen.
I still think it works better this way than when we had Gianluca Petracchi, who basically like an ex-con, you know, just out of or San Quentin, you know. He'd have these press conferences and basically threaten people left and right and say, I'm the best, I did this, I did that. And he still does it nowadays. He's like, I got Smalling, I got Ibanez, I got Mancini, and it's been, what, like 5 years? So that's interesting. Which, John, I'm going to do your job for you. This leads us from Thiago Pinto to his potential successor, which we don't know who that may be, as in there is a lot of names floating around. We are, as you said, 2 months almost after Thiago Pinto officially left the club. Thiago Pinto's announcement that he will depart Roma, I remember, took place on December 23rd because I was heading home for Christmas. And yet here we are, and there is, yes, there is a name of François Modesto of Monza that's consistently linked with us. But as you touched upon, it's just weird to be in this situation because you always felt like the Friedkins especially had like one more bullet in their chamber, you know, and that you don't know about. And yet clearly here we are in a different situation. There is probably tons of discussions ongoing behind the scenes. Daniele De Rossi's arrival also surely had to play a part in these discussions as to, you know, the kind of profile of the kind of executive that you want to pair him up with if you make him Roma's long-term coach. So that's where we're at. I don't know what... you can add to this discussion from your point of view, as you seem to be also in.
Yeah, well, listen, they're having done this with the Friedkins for some time now. It seems like they just got here, but in truth, doing this with them is getting close to almost half a decade, which is very weird to say in terms of the initial negotiation to present day. They are. Obviously, they keep things very close to the vest. They do not reveal their cards very often. So this whole search for a new director of sport really brought me back to before they got Thiago Pinto, the name that they had talks with. It is absolutely confirmed. This is just like the thing when Thiago Pinto tried to retcon the fact that they only talked to Jose Mourinho and nobody else. No, they met for Sarri in London. I will not let him retcon that. In this case, for the director of sport, before they got Thiago Pinto, they did meet for Jonas Bolt of Hamburg. Didn't go with him. This thing with Modesto reminds me so much of it because the one name we are hearing, nothing they have done has been this way, where the name that we hear the most, the loudest, the most consistent is the one that they appoint. It hasn't gone this way. That is not their modus operandi. They keep everything close to the vest. So I am very hesitant to say that it is going to be Modesto. However, I did get word from only one person. Roma would not confirm it. That we all know that the Friedkins, they added Kahn to their portfolio of, one football club, car dealerships, hotels. They added third tier or fourth? Fourth, I believe, yeah? Of the French League? Whatever. Kahn.
Yeah. Just as an excuse to be closer to the film festival.
Well, there we go. I got word that they had met Modesto in Monaco, which would make sense because Monaco is not at all far from Cannes. And every person who is even remotely associated with football who has money, Monaco seems to be the place where you live or the place where you need to have a meeting or the place where you want to avoid tax authorities from your respective residence.
I think that's the primary reason. Nobody goes, you know, to Monaco. You know.
Nonetheless, I had from a very, 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 very strong person connected. Informed me that they met with that Ryan Friedkin and met with Modesto in Monaco. No, I didn't put it yet on the website or even for the patrons. I'm going to do something within the next day or two. But they have meetings all the time. They met with Bolt plenty of times. They met for Sarri. Does it really mean anything? I don't think so. I do not know what to make of it, but something tells to me that this is different. Only in the sense of they usually have all of their ducks in a row. So for it to be this long, which, by the way, people may think, okay, well, what is the big deal? The season is still going on. Right now, literally right now is when everything begins. The discussions for the next season, the negotiations between clubs. Yes, the transfer market is not open. You can't do an official transfer. But no, I would assume everybody knows by now that negotiations happen every single day throughout the year between clubs. Just because you can't put the transfer through, that has nothing to do with it. It is inconsequential. Now is when the things really begin to accelerate for the summer. So I cannot imagine that they are comfortable going into April and May. If you are only beginning your work for the summer transfer market in May, you are so far behind, you might as well sit out of the race in many cases for many players. Part of me then, because of that, because I do not think they are that stupid, they are looking at somebody who wants to finish the season, who has a contract coming to an end, or somebody where it's a situation like Petrarca. You brought him up. We might as well say it again because in one of his cases, one of my tweets was used as evidence against him. The tweet no longer exists. I deleted it when asked by someone connected to his team.
Yeah, I remember. I mentioned
Petrarca was working for Roma.
I mentioned it on
well before.
Yeah, when
yes,
when he came out,
Petrarca was working for Roma well before he terminated his contract with Torino, and before his contract with Roma officially started. Everyone knows that. He knows that. I still remember he had met with Paulo Fonseca in Spain.
He was coming out of the airport of the on the on the moving stairs. Yeah,
and I mean, by the way, the testimony he gave in his defense was, "Well, I was just traveling. I was just traveling." mind you, he forgot to mention or failed to mention that there were a few reporters in Fiumicino waiting for him in the terminal. And he was saying, I will speak later. I will speak later. It's like, oh, you just don't say nothing. But for him, as we have seen over the years, saying nothing and to be thought of a fool than to open your mouth and remove all remaining doubt is not something he adheres to.
Absolutely.
So this thing with the sporting directors, I don't know what to make of it. I mean, I have been saying from the beginning, make it Massara, make it Massara, make it Ricky Massara.
Massara is speaking to anybody, right? It doesn't seem like he's being put on anybody's list after leaving Milan. I expected him to have a stronger, draw more interest, even from abroad, not only Italy.
Yes.
I mean, he's just been sort of lurking in the shadows. I don't really get it.
Well, that's a great way to describe the guy. Having been around him and for a long time, lurking in the shadows, as creepy as that sounds. Right now, think of Masada's voice and what it sounds like in your head on the video, and you can see him speaking. You can't. The guy is so, I mean, almost to a fault, mute far too often. But that is something we could say for another day. So yeah, we will have to see what happens. Some of the other things as far as this last part of the season. So we enter now the final stretch. This is the last leg, the final push. And the calendar is grueling. I'll put it up on the screen now, what it looks like for the rest of the season in April and May. This is the death march, so to speak. This is when it all begins. Not easy. And of course, should Roma beat Milan and advance, that is two more. And then if they make it to a final, one more. We can wait to cross that bridge until we get to it. One thing we have seen, though, Tammy Abraham back. It would be foolish to expect him to play any sort of important role, right? I don't think anybody is counting on that, correct?
I'm not. Clearly, Italian media are trying to steer it into a different direction, you know, claiming that he's been impressing Daniele De Rossi to such a degree that he could play an important role in Roma's plans within the next 2 to 3 weeks, ideally alongside Romelu Lukaku. That's supposedly what Daniele De Rossi sees as the perfect attacking duo. I don't see it. This has been a guy who has always relied on pace, and he's been sitting for 9 months on his ass. Really, a really lengthy absence. And for a guy who, as a, again, was all about
being in the final match of the season.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
still so vivid.
Yeah, June 3rd, I believe. And
yes.
So it's been a long time. And I just don't see Tammy Abraham being able to all of a sudden spring back to life. I wish him the best, but I think these final weeks of the season will just be just a nice feeling for him to be back with the squad. Not much else. I just don't see him playing an important role for Roma. Obviously, I would like to be surprised, especially given that Sardar Azmoun, at the most crucial time of the season, is out. We don't know how long. He's yet to undergo any kind of tests on what looked like a really serious hamstring injury. So we are, you know, one step away from seeing Romelu Lukaku basically start every single game until the end of the season. Because if Azmoun is out for a month, that basically rules him out for the remainder of the season.
Correct.
And that basically concludes his spell at Roma. And I would not envision him staying beyond this season if he gets hurt now. And then there is always, I mean, you'll say the death march, but the death march also correlates to so many questions because Chris Smalling, what the hell is up with this man? You know, if I could go on a Stephen A. Smith rant right now, I would go. Because what?
Careful, his agents, they will be watching this and I will get another message about things to take down.
I know that he's been through hell and back, but we as fans have also been through hell and back. We don't know what the hell's going on with him. How do you go from having one of the most incredibly consistent on a performative level seasons that I've ever seen a defender have at Roma?
Yes.
Last season, I mean, the number of yellow cards was so limited, you can count them on one single hand for a defender. The way he led Roma all the way to Budapest was amazing. He signs that contract extension, and just like in his second year at Roma, once he signed the permanent deal, he folds and he folds and he folds again. And I just can't make any sense of it because his absence is so important. He could be so crucial for Roma. And yet we just have to accept that he's just like another Renato Sanchez, which he shouldn't be because last season he was arguably
best defender in Serie A, among the best.
Last year he was top three most important players for Roma. With Paulo Dybala leading the way, but Chris Smalling was right there behind him. So I just don't know what to say about that situation. There is always all these players that are on loan that exactly like Sardar Azmoun. What do you do with them if he gets hurt now? Do Roma even try and bet on him in the long run? Then you have Dean Huizen, who is probably going to go back at the end of the season. You know, all these things that Paulo Dybala, the big question, Paulo Dybala, what's it going to be? Romelu Lukaku, what's it going to be? Romelu Lukaku, unlikely to stay because, hey, Chelsea won 43 million euros. So I don't see that Roma could even get a fraction of that up front for Chelsea. So it's a death march, but it's also a death march from a club perspective, as in from a management perspective. That's why the sporting director thing is so urgent, because there is really many situations that need to be addressed within the coming weeks.
Well, then that takes us nicely to matters on the pitch. It's Lecce. It's away to Lecce. Now, I don't levy nearly enough criticism of Lecce. The last time I did, it was for anybody who has been that far south of the country. No, listen, last time I said this, or it might have been when I mentioned Bari, or no, Bari. It might have been Bari. Later.
What's up? Whatever.
Somebody sent me an email saying, hey, you need to stop making fun of the way they talk down there. I'm not making fun of the way they talk. I'm simply trying to point out they speak something that isn't Italian. That is all I am saying.
Okay.
Anybody who has been down there, anybody who has traveled that far south, can attest to the fact that you don't know what they are saying to you.
Okay. And this is part of the tourism section of the.
Well, yeah.
What are we?
Well, and too, and you can attest to this too. The heat, man. The heat down there. It is.
But it's not yet. It's not yet. No.
Not yet. No, no, no. I'm just saying, once you travel down there, I mean, if you fly down there from Rome, I mean, it is not the longest of airplane flights, but it feels as if you have gone straight into the equator, even though technically, I mean, it's really not that far. It's amazing to me how much hotter it is.
Imagine a lot of our listeners just started to tune out as we analyze the weather conditions in Lecce.
Listen, anything I can do to increase tourism in the country, I will always do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the problem with Lecce? I don't understand.
No, beyond not being able to understand what anybody says down there. But hey, listen, it's just Rome is the same. Often you cannot. I mean,
okay.
It's a language within a language. But anyway, so Lecce, as for Lecce, listen, even though they sit, I think it's either, let me pull it up. I thought it was 12. No, okay, so it is 13th. Okay. So they are 13 in the table. You think, I mean, logic would dictate that, okay, mid table, they should be relatively comfortable in their position. The difference from 13th to 19th. Is 5 points. 5 points. So I have said it on a number of occasions. I despise with every fiber within my body when Roma have to come up against these sorts of teams. These sorts of teams who are fighting for salvation, who are trying to avoid relegation, they will, again, shithouse would be a compliment. Shithouse would be painting a beautiful picture as to what some of these teams will do to get points. I cannot envision something where Roma go in there. It is comfortable. It is beautiful. It is easy. And we have it wrapped up by the 50th to 60th minute. It is not going to be that way.
They have a new manager in place, you know. I mean, they have...
The guy you love. He's your man because...
I love Gotti because I will always think of him as the guy who was doing brilliantly as interim manager at Udinese. He was constantly being like, I don't want this job. I hate this job. I'm under pressure. Please get me out. It's like, I'm not comfortable being in this position. And he was doing wonders with them. After coming up, I think he was like the manager of the Primavera or something. I don't remember.
Yes.
And
he did unbelievable.
Interviewed, and every interview was him just going, I know I'm not meant for this job. I don't like it. So I have great respect for him. He's one of the few interim coaches in Italy because Italy has a number of these, and Ballardini, whom we faced a couple of weeks ago, is one of them as well. These coaches that recurringly just get the worst jobs imaginable and they have to save a situation. Well, Gotti is one of these guys, and I actually respect him. I like what he does. I like what he did with Spezia. I like what he did with Udinese. So this will not be an easy game by any means, but not a single one of these upcoming games is. We have to see if Dybala is going to be there because he's still out. So what do you do then? Do you try and mix things up? Is Hussein Mouawar still going to start in Dybala's place like he did against Sassuolo? Or perhaps you give Baldanzi a chance? These are all things that you have to consider. Because the schedule is grueling, because you will be playing every 3 days all the way until the end of May. Then guess what? You're flying to Australia so to make our patrons happy. And that's all I got right now, John. Is they're playing on Pasquetta. Everybody's going to be tuning in with a
yes.
big chocolate egg and with something sweet to eat, and just hopefully they pull it out of the backside. I don't think this is a game that you just have to pull it out of your backside. This is a game that if they prepare it really well, I'll be astonished. Let's just put it that way.
That makes two of us. I would be astonished, but fingers crossed. We will be back after the match. For those of you who celebrate, have a safe and enjoyable holiday. We will chat in a few days. Until then, ciao.